Welcome to China in Focus. I'm Alice Tang, in for Tiffany Meyer. Our top story. American AI technology giving Chinese hackers a leg up in cybercrime. Details on how Chinese hackers use a US company's AI tools to automate a hacking campaign. Alibaba under fire. A new White House memo says the Chinese e-commerce giant is aiding China's military operations against the US. Details on that coming up. The US has approved a $330 million arms sale to Taiwan, the first since President Trump began his second term, signaling he won't use Taiwan as a bargaining chip, countering earlier rumors. How far can China's long arm reach beyond its borders? As far as New York City. A Chinese indie film festival set for this week was canceled after Chinese authorities targeted its organizers and participants. Chinese hackers using American AI technology to automate hacking. The San Francisco-based AI startup Anthropic says state-backed Chinese hackers exploited its technology to hack companies and governments this September. The company added that Chinese hackers targeted 30 entities and that they managed to steal sensitive information. Anthropic did not disclose the victims. Chinese hackers told the AI tools that they were carrying out security audits on the target's behalf. They also split the campaign into smaller tasks to avoid raising alarms in the program. The company said what's unique about this attack is that it's highly automated. Hackers use Anthropic's AI tools to handle 80% of the operations. Anthropic says Chinese hackers carry out their attacks with a click of a button and then with minimal human interaction. This marks an escalation in AI-powered cybercrime. In the past, hackers mostly relied on it for phishing emails or finding targets. U.S. officials have repeatedly warned that China is using AI to target U.S. government entities and companies. This summer, China-backed hackers used AI to automate parts of their attacks on corporations. And earlier this month, Microsoft said China, Russia, Iran, and North Korea are increasingly relying on AI for cyber attacks against the U.S. Using these tools to conduct cyber attacks highlight the dual-use danger of AI technology. Researchers in the field have said these tools would benefit cybersecurity defenses. But at the same time, more advanced AI could give attackers even greater capabilities. The US is a primary target for Chinese hacking groups. Back in January, they attempted to track the locations of millions of Americans and record their phone calls. The same hackers also targeted Vice President-elect J.D. Vance's phone, and then-President-elect Trump's phone was reportedly on their list as well. The White House is raising new concerns about Chinese e-commerce and tech giant Alibaba. A memo shared with the Financial Times says Alibaba had been providing the Chinese military with tech support aimed at targets in the U.S. It also claims the company gives the Chinese regime access to customer data, things like IP addresses, Wi-Fi details, and payment records. Alibaba quickly denied all these claims, but after the news broke, shares in the Chinese tech company fell 4.5%. The memo, dated November 1st, came right after President Trump met with Chinese leader Xi in South Korea. The White House wouldn't say whether its plans to respond to the allegations. And this isn't the first time U.S. lawmakers have raised concerns. Some have urged the Trump administration to take tougher action against the Alibaba Group. It's the first deal of its kind since President Trump took office earlier this year. The U.S. is approving a potential $330 million sale of fighter jet and aircraft parts to Taiwan, drawing gratitude from Taipei and sharp criticism from Beijing. According to the Pentagon, on Thursday, the arms sale includes F-16 fighter jets and C-130 transport aircraft. The F-15 fighter jets are designed to outmaneuver enemy fighters, hit targets accurately in any weather, and is capable of flying long distances. Meanwhile, the C-130 aircrafts can carry and transport many types of large or heavy cargo on the ground or by air, with the capability to airdrop cargo up to 4,200 pounds. The deal is expected to take effect in a month. Taiwanese officials call the U.S.-Taiwan partnership critical for peace and stability across the Indo-Pacific. They added that the equipment would help Taiwan counter China's gray zone activities, which are frequent military flights and naval moves that stop short of conflict. Beijing condemned the deal. A Chinese foreign ministry spokesperson says it's the first red line the U.S. must not cross if it wants to maintain relations with Beijing. The Chinese communist regime claims democratic Taiwan as its own despite never having ruled it. This latest U.S. arms sales to Taiwan comes just a few weeks after Trump and Xi's talks last month in South Korea. Analysts say the move signals that Trump won't use Taiwan as a bargaining chip, dispelling earlier rumors. Japan's chief cabinet secretary on Friday reiterated his country's position on Taiwan remained unchanged.
Peace and security in the Taiwan Strait is vital for Japan's security, but also for the stability of the international community. The government of Japan has consistently maintained the position that we expect issues concerning Taiwan to be resolved through peaceful dialogue.
Japan says it has consistently maintained its position that the issue should be resolved through peaceful dialogue. The spat between Beijing and Tokyo was sparked by Japanese leader Shinai Takeuchi. She made remarks in parliament last week that a Chinese attack on Taiwan could amount to a survival-threatening situation and trigger a military response from Tokyo. The U.S. and South Korea have unveiled a framework of a sweeping new trade agreement, one that includes more than $350 billion in planned Korean investments across American shipbuilding and major industrial sectors.
Project selection will be completed by January 2029, when President Trump's term ends. The funds required for project implementation will be paid within 45 business days after receiving notification of the U.S. investment destination selection.
The announcement follows President Trump's October meeting with South Korean President Lee Jae-myung, where the two leaders agreed to cut tariffs on Korean imports from 25% down to 15%. Officials say a new memorandum of understanding outlined dozens of potential projects, from shipyards to artificial intelligence and nuclear energy. The deal also opens a door for South Korea to build nuclear-powered submarines and expand fuel processing capabilities. Seoul will phase its cash investments over time to avoid disrupting currency markets. Seoul has also pledged to raise defense spending to 3.5% of its GDP, becoming the first U.S. ally outside NATO to meet the standards set by President Trump at the Hague summit. North Korean troops helped Russia repel a major Ukrainian incursion into its western Kursk region. Now Moscow says they are playing an important role in clearing the area of mines. Here are the details.
Video published by the Russian Defense Ministry on Friday showed North Korean troops being trained to detect different types of landmines and how to use mine detection equipment. The Defense Ministry said Pyongyang's forces were playing an important role in clearing Russia's Kursk region of the explosives left after a Ukrainian surprise incursion last year. Ukrainian troops smashed through the Russian border in August 2024 and held substantial pockets of Russian territory for months. Russian President Vladimir Putin said in April that Moscow had finally pushed them out with the help of North Korean soldiers. North Korea last year sent some 14,000 soldiers to fight alongside Russia in Kursk. South Korean, Ukrainian, and Western sources say more than 6,000 were killed. Russian military news outlet Krasnaya Zvezda said the Russian and North Korean soldiers were dealing with a previously unseen density of anti-tank and anti-personnel mines left behind by Ukrainian forces in Kursk. The significant North Korean role in Russia's demining operations highlights the desire for both sides to further develop their military ties, which North Korean leader Kim Jong-un said last month would advance nonstop.
Secretary of War Pete Hegseth says the U.S. is launching a new military operation targeting what he calls narco-terrorists in the Western Hemisphere. Hegseth announced Operation Southern Spear in a post on X Thursday, saying it follows an order from President Trump. The operation will be led by the new Joint Task Force Southern Spear, likely working alongside U.S. Southern Command. Hegseth did not outline immediate steps, but says the mission is meant to combat domestic threats in the U.S. The rollout comes as U.S. forces expand anti-drug operations in the region, including strikes on suspected smuggling vessels. The federal government is open, but some officials say it's not easy to get everything back to normal. And some furloughed federal workers are returning to hefty to-do lists. Here's a look at the challenges they face as they try to catch up.
Some functions of the federal government are getting back online quickly post-shutdown. Others face impediments. The Agriculture Secretary says SNAP benefits should go out by Monday at the latest.
It's moving, it's coming, and for those who really depend on it, good news is on the way.
Officials say certain federal employees should start getting back pay today. Some agencies warn it could take another week to make their staffs whole. Meanwhile, the Smithsonian says it's opening its museums and zoo on a rolling basis starting today. The National Gallery says it'll be fully open by tomorrow. Conservationists say some national parks are dealing with litter and graffiti after operating with skeleton crews. As for air travel, the FAA continues to cut flights as air traffic controllers return to work. But Delta Airlines CEO sounds optimistic.
I think we'll be back a lot faster than people think. Thanksgiving is going to be a great holiday period of travel.
Coming up, how far can China's long arm reach beyond its borders? As far as New York City. A Chinese indie film festival set for this week was canceled after Chinese authorities targeted its organizers and participants. The BBC has apologized and pulled the misleading documentary on President Trump as the network faces mounting criticism. We'll unpack the developments. Welcome back to China in Focus. I'm Alice Tang. President Trump is defending his plan to offer 600,000 visas to Chinese students. He says it's part of a broader push to keep U.S. colleges financially supported. In an interview with Fox News' Laura Ingraham earlier this week, Trump said the U.S. had always welcomed students from China and other countries. Watch.
If we were to cut that in half, which perhaps makes some people happy, you would have half the colleges in the United States go out of business. We take in trillions of dollars from students. You know, the students pay more than double when they come in from most foreign countries. I want to see our school system thrive.
It's worth noting that international students typically pay more tuition than American students. Trump added that bringing in those students aligned with what he says the MAGA movement wants, a thriving U.S. economy. In New York City, the center of art and culture in the U.S., a movie festival featuring dozens of indie films was forced to cancel due to enormous amounts of pressure and interference from Beijing. This is one of the Chinese regime's latest attempts to enforce its suppression and censorship tactics beyond China's borders. To find out how all these happened, NTD's Flora Hua talks to the director of the film festival for first-hand account. Here's the story.
Why was the film festival canceled and so suddenly?
Yes, well, every time I'm asked, I tell people, don't ask me this question. You should ask those who suppressed the festival why they decided to cancel it.
If we were to rate it on a scale from 1 to 10, with 10 being the highest, how would you rate the pressure or threats you and your festival participants faced?
You can only rate it as a 10. The scope was extremely broad. It wasn't just me, as I said. Directors, their families, and even people attending the festival or those helping to host discussions, basically anyone involved could experience interference. So the reach is very wide.
So what kinds of interferences were there?
It wasn't just economic threats. It could even include safety threats in many forms. They could also target your family, which is another type of threat.
How can they threaten family? Do they lock them up or something?
I don't know exactly how they do it. Many people connected to China have family there. Even if your parents aren't targeted, they can go after your siblings. They don't even have to say anything. A few people might just visit your home, and that alone creates immense psychological pressure.
Drew posted on Facebook just days before the event, saying he got a phone call from his father in China. His father spoke in an unusual tone, warning him not to do anything that harms China. He then received a separate phone call from his studio in Beijing, threatening to arrest him once he returned to China. Drew was never told why. When you first heard about all these, was your initial reaction to cancel?
Of course, I didn't want to cancel from the beginning. At first, I just thought maybe only a small number of people were under pressure and unsure about screening their films. But in the end, when 80 to 90% of them said they couldn't show their films, it meant the festival would have almost nothing left to screen.
When you finally made the decision to cancel, how did you feel inside?
I felt really upset because after working on this for so long, in the end, we couldn't even show the films publicly. We couldn't even meet the most basic requirement of running a normal film festival. I condemn the pressure that forced me to cancel the festival, and I will continue to protest it. I will keep telling people about what happened.
Drew has repeatedly said he's simply an artist who wants to uphold freedom of expression, isn't an activist. Meanwhile, Drew still hopes he can return to China and keep contributing to the Chinese filmmaking industry. But he knows he may have to give up his passion and lifelong career, and even carry out prison time. Flora Hua, NTD News.
Shaying Performing Arts has dazzled audiences worldwide with the extraordinary skill and grace of its classical Chinese dancers. Now, for a limited time, viewers have a rare chance to see what makes their performances so breathtaking in a special Mid-Autumn Festival Technique showcasing premiering November 15th on the video platform Ganjin World. Here's an early look. Watch the exclusive premiere on November 15th at 8 p.m. Eastern on Ganjin World. The BBC apologized to President Trump over a documentary that selectively edited a clip of his January 6, 2021 speech. The edit spliced together parts of the speech that were nearly 1 hour apart, giving the impression that Trump had called for violence. The documentary was aired in the run-up to the 2024 election. While the BBC has now retracted the documentary and apologized, Trump's legal team is now calling for a compensation, which the BBC is refusing to pay. NTD's international correspondent Malcolm Hudson brings us more on this story.
The British Broadcasting Corporation, or BBC, sent a personal apology to President Trump on Thursday, but said they believe there is no legal basis for Trump to sue the public broadcaster over a documentary Trump's lawyers called defamatory. The BBC edit created the false impression that Trump had called for violence ahead of the January 6th Capitol breach. Speaking to the BBC, British Culture Secretary Lisa Nandy said it is right the BBC apologised.
I am confident that they've already started the work to get not just the right processes in place to make sure this doesn't happen again and get consistency across the board, but also to get the right mix of experience at the top of the organisation to make sure that those high journalistic standards are well understood at the top of the organisation and are upheld.
Last Sunday, Trump's lawyers threatened to sue the BBC for damages of up to $1 billion unless it withdrew the documentary, apologised to the president, and compensated him for financial and reputational harm. The BBC said the splicing of the speech was a, quote, error of judgment. It has withdrawn the documentary and apologised, but is refusing to pay compensation, and is now waiting for Trump's response to their apology. The BBC's Panorama news programme ran a documentary where they spliced together two parts of Trump's speech on January 6th, 2021. It aired just before the US presidential election in 2024. The edit changed the meaning of the speech, creating the impression Trump had explicitly called for violence.
They played the following clip.
We're going to walk down to the Capitol, and I'll be there with you, and we fight. We fight like hell.
But here is what Trump really said.
Right here, we're going to walk down to the Capitol. And we're going to cheer on our brave senators and congressmen and women.
Trump said fight like hell 54 minutes later in a separate part of his speech and in a different context. On Thursday, the Telegraph newspaper reported the BBC also doctored the same speech in a similar way in 2022, more than 2 years before the Panorama edit aired. Trump's legal team said this shows a pattern of defamation against Trump. Responding to the fresh claims, a BBC spokesperson said, "The BBC holds itself to the highest editorial standards and is now looking at the matter." White House Press Secretary Caroline Leavitt on Thursday said the BBC's edits are a clear example of fake news.
The president has made it very clear that this is a leftist propaganda machine that is unfortunately subsidized by British taxpayers, and he thinks that's extremely unfortunate for the great people of the United Kingdom and Great Britain.
The BBC has been thrown into its biggest crisis in decades amid allegations of bias, including on the edit of Trump's speech. The claims came to light because of a leaked report by a BBC standards official. Two senior executives have since resigned. Malcolm Hudson, NTD News, UK.
London's Kew Gardens is getting ready to sparkle for the holiday season. An enchanting nighttime trail will bring the gardens to life with color, sound, and shimmering displays. Take a look.
The display includes a light show on Temperate House, various light installations, a dance floor, and an orchestra made of lights illuminating the after-dark landscape of the gardens.
This year we've got 8 world-exclusive installations as part of the event. That includes bespoke things like the Palm House show behind me. We've put a bridge over the Palm House pond. We have an orchestra made of lights. We've got blooms blowing in the air. Mycelium networks reaching out from under tree trunks. I think one of the things I like about Christmas at Kew is that it has very gentle moments, like the one behind me, which is very contemplative, but there's also really fun and jazzy bits. So we've got a dance floor. We're encouraging people to dance along with giant headphones. But I think if I had to pick a favorite, the mycelium network is really beautiful. It kind of explores the network underground between mushrooms. Just feels so fitting at Kew, so, you know, the home of the fungarium.
Now in its 13th year, Christmas at Kew began as an initiative to attract guests at a traditionally quiet time for the gardens.
And what was once the quietest time of year at Kew is now one of the busiest. We have more than 300,000 people that are going to be coming over the next 49 nights to see this amazing show.
Christmas at Kew opens to the public today and runs until Sunday, January 4th, 2026.
That's all for today's China in Focus. I'm Alice Tang in for Tiffany Meyer. If you have any feedback on the show or have something you'd like to see us cover, send us an email at chinainfocus@ntd.com. We'd love to hear from you. For round-the-clock original news coverage, watch us live at ntd.com or download our NTD app. Thanks for watching. See you soon.